Hello everyone, welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Doing this one, no intro theme, nothing like that. Let's just strip it all bare. We're talking grand final. This has had to be recorded in a bum's rush because of that quick turnaround from Thursday to the game today. I saw on social media that some Perth fans' heart rates were up around the 130 beats per minute or something ridiculous like that. So my thought is, calm down. Okay, Perth Wildcat fans or NBL fans, if you're a huge one, calm down. All right, listen to this, relax. We're going to talk basketball. I think ultimately you're going to like what I have to say. Kings fans, you have to wait and see. I've got some complimentary things to say about your team as well. But let's just talk basketball guff before the grand final. Okay, I'm talking straight to you, straight through your headphones. Before we can accurately talk about the coming grand final in what is about 10 hours time, we need to talk about the semifinals. A reminder though, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. I've got a couple of things coming out on this platform, especially when the season ends, do some season wraps and some look at some off-season stuff, contracts, etc. But I've also got a longer form think piece about the NBL coming out. That's in the style of sort of Malcolm Gladwell's revisionist history, if you're a fan of that podcast. I think you'll enjoy, and that is centered around Andrew Gaze, so maybe you like that. Subscribe to keep abreast with all of that. But let's jump into the semifinals, games three, the thoughts on both of these games. Let's look at Sydney and Melbourne first. Sydney winning this one 89-87. Mitch McCarron with the late layup to make this one the margin that it is. Firstly, Will Weaver showed some adaptability with Cooks coming out of the starting lineup and Brad Newley returning to the starting lineup. But was it at his instigation or initiative? The word in the press is that Xavier Cooks himself subtracted himself from the starting lineup, which is not the sort of answer I wanted to hear. Another subtle adjustment, I suppose, and I think this was of Weaver's design, was to remove Craig Moller from the rotation entirely. His 10 to 12 minutes were predominantly redistributed towards Didi Lazada and Casper Ware, which I thought was a plus. Not because Moller's a poor player, but because of the injury interruption to his season. Tate, Cooks, Casper Ware, and Bogut were the ones that did it for the Kings. I got a question for you out there. Did we all enjoy Jayshon Tate on Sean Long late in the piece? I thought that was an interesting defensive decision from the Kings. We can't talk about this game for very long without bringing up the officiating, so let's go for it. The foul count, 27 to 15. Free throw count, 25 to 11. Both massively in favor of the Sydney Kings. Stanton Kidd, Sean Long, and JLA, Joe Lualachul, all had four fouls at some point in this game. Barlow, Trimble, and Chris Golding all with three, whereas no King had four fouls, and I believe only Bogut and Casper Ware had three. Not too sure about that, though. You can probably hear a car starting up in the driveway there. The Bogut hit on McCarron that he put his hand up to accept the charge, the foul call on, and that went against McCarron was egregious. And then obviously I thought the most, I think that one was actually worse as far as what was an obvious foul, because I haven't seen a baseline angle of the one I'm going to talk about, the Lish push on Trimble. But what made this worse was the where we're at in the game. That was a critical time when where else would a referee be looking than that play? And Lish forearmed Trimble. I don't think Trimble simulated or took a dive. As I said, I haven't seen that baseline angle. Maybe it just looked really bad in the press box angle. It's the only one I've seen online. But geez, even from that angle, it looked pretty pretty conclusive that it was a bad call. Lish hits the step back three with Trimble on the floor, who, in his credit, and I think this is the difference between Melbourne and a number of teams, in particular the Perth Wildcats, because Gleeson is on the referee so much, it sort of affords his team the ability to just play. And I think if Bryce Cotton, say, or Damian Martin had taken this hit on the play, they would have been shocked at the no call, but they would have gotten up sprightlier and quicker than Trimble and contested this shot. Anyway, but Lish hit this shot, taking the score to 87-85 in favor of the Kings, and it was that scoreboard pressure that just led to a meltdown from the United thereafter. I mean, a lot of people said, was it rigged? Well, I'm not a believer in home cooking or rigging of refs. I just don't see how that happens. And also in this particular game, so is it better for the league that Sydney win or Sydney lose? I mean, Larry Kesselman was sitting in the front row. He owns Melbourne United. Melbourne Arena holds 10,500. Kudos Bank Arena holds 17,500. So maybe it's in the interest to go to the bigger venue and bigger team. But you would have thought if the NBL owned the team, they would want Melbourne to get through because there's a direct revenue stream. So it's kind of like, well, how do you, you know, where's, if it's rigged, which I don't think it was, where's everything going? It's got me for a loss there. You know, I've heard the other theory that, well, having Kesselman around means that refs see him there and just sort of by osmosis start calling calls the way of United. Well, obviously that didn't happen. And if it's the home team, why the home team? So I'm still kind of lost at the gain for why these games would be rigged. I just thought it was really poor officiating, as did Dean Vickerman in his post-conferences. And to Dean Vickerman's absolute credit, he actually gave some really good ideas about improving the referee standard. More collusion between officials, teams, coaches, and players. The officiating in this game and routinely throughout NBL 20, when it's poor, which it sometimes isn't, you got to remember as well, I think only sort of the poorly refereed games are in the minority. The refereeing in the poor games seems contrary, combative, and reactionary. There's little cohesion and a good sense of humor between officials in the league and the players. I thought the sense of humor with referees and players and coaches kind of went out of the league with Andrew Gaze. I thought he had a very good rapport with referees, and as a result, most of his games were done quite well. Whereas now it's a lot more combative. He was very jovial and funny with referees, and it's gone out with him. Question to everyone out there, is anyone beaming with confidence around the Kings after this series? Or even after their comeback win in game one? I'm really not. I mean, they barely held home court advantage. They won by, you know, 6 or 8 points combined in these two games and then got creamed in the other one. So I'm not so confident coming out of this. On the flip side, I thought Melbourne played really well. Mitch McCarron and Sean Long throughout the series and in this game, but Mitch McCarron especially in this game, I thought he was fantastic. Chris Golding was a threat to take over this game. He had 19 points in the first half. He didn't score in the second. He had 2 turnovers, 0-4, a couple of nice assists. But my question to you out there is, was Trimble cramping his style or was Chris Golding settling? I didn't see a lot at the hoop for Chris Golding. I didn't even know if he took a free throw. Certainly not in the second half. But that's my question to you. Trimble cramping his style or was he settling? You tell me. Golding in the regular season, 17.5 points per game. In the finals, 12.5. So from 17.5 to 12.3. Trimble and Golding never found a synergy on the floor. Is it because they hate each other? I think that's the sensational answer to give. Or that one hates the other? My answer would be not necessarily. Sometimes it just doesn't click. Trimble had a 17% increase in scoring against Sydney in the finals. He went from 20.4 points per game in the regular season to 24 in the finals. And a 3% increase in his field goal percentage. I should have looked at effective field goal percentage or true field goal percentage. Couldn't be bothered. But he went up 44 to 47, so I can only assume he improved in those advanced metrics as well. But at the end of the day, Melbourne are going fishing. They're done. So the big question online, now that we've done this series, what's Melbourne United's blueprint going forward? Well, the big question I saw online was, what will Melbourne do with CG43, who's out of contract? I don't think that's their biggest question, but nonetheless, let's look at it. Golding is turning 32 years old. This team came within 4 points in game three, or 8 points in game one, of making the finals. 11 points combined, let's say, of making the finals. And this team has invested 6 months in maturing and teaching Melo Trimble, 25 years old, and Sean Long, 27 years old, prime, in other words. Golding is not in his prime. He now enters subprime, into their program. They've spent 6 months working with these two guys. The better question than what are they going to do about CG43 is, what are they going to do about these two players? Prather, they know, is coming back. These two, they don't know. They've invested 6 months. There's a lot of people who get in a relationship with a girl or a guy for 6 months and think, oh, it's an okay thing, and continue with it for the rest of their days. This is basketball. I think you've invested too much in Melo Trimble to just say, oh, it didn't work out, and pull the pin. I really feel that that would be a mistake. The question I have for you out there is, do you pull the plug? Patience versus promise is the question for United. Let's jump across to the Perth and Cairns game. Perth winning this one 93-82. I mean, I've got a couple of simple dot points. Nick Kay, 24 points, 12 rebounds. Tariqo White, 26 points. Bryce Cotton, 9 assists. Mitch Norton, a guy who I had criticized last time, had 10 points, 66%, 6 rebounds, 4 of which, more than half, were on the offensive end. He played really well. I have egg on my face, and I'm not ashamed or embarrassed to admit it. Wagstaff and Steindl combined for 20 points, 6 of 9 from the outside. I've often called this team Bryce Cotton and the Cottonaires, or Bryce Cotton and the Wildcast. Well, the Wildcast stepped up big time and stemmed from Tariqo White. But Wagstaff and Steindl, 20 points, 6 of 9 from the outside. That just changes their game on its head. If Cotton had a half of what he normally scores, this is a blowout. I didn't think the officiating was as bad in this game, so I'm not going to comment. DJ Newball was really good on Bryce Cotton. There was a lot of stings, blitzes, double teams, but a decent whack of one-on-one coverage, and Newball excelled and did really well. A couple of steals, a couple of shots that Cotton was way out of balance and never going to make. However, it did take it out of DJ Newball, who went 2 of 12 from the field on the other end. So they beat Cotton. Great. But it took your best player, second best offensive threat, off the floor. Maybe third, depending on where you play solo. But took one of your top offensive threats to stop Perth. You take that exchange if you're the Taipans. But then the problem is they lost pretty much every other battle that was important to winning this game and series. Cairns lost the turnover battle 10-9. Cam Oliver, the big offender, with 4. Cairns lost the offensive rebounding battle 10-16 and the overall rebound battle 45-35 in favor of the Wildcats. Cairns lost the second chance points battle as a result, 9-20 in favor of the Wildcats. I think the bigger problem across the finals for Cairns, and even the last couple of weeks of the season that prevented them from perhaps getting the second seed, was that Kouat Noy never really found himself off the bench. 16 games played as a starter, he averaged 11.4 points per game. As a part of the second unit, 4.6. That's a lot less. The minutes came down as well. He never quite made his way back into the confidence or the rotation that he had when he was a starter. His three-point percentage went from 35 as a starter down to 20. A starting job is what he needs to be at his best. Looking at two big plays in particular that swung this one for Cairns. The missed dunk by Cam Oliver early, not a good start, but even worse than that. And that one was bad, and it set a tone. He missed this dunk, and he had his shoulder shrugged, like, oh, whatever, it happens. It's a finals game. I thought it was a stain, but anyway. Worse than that mistake was the failed alley-oop fast break between Kouat Noy and DJ Newball. I believe it was Damian Martin defending the two. Can't recall. A two-point make in that instance would have taken the scores to within 5 points, 81-76. Instead, it went the other way for a Tariqo White dagger three, ballooning the score to 10 points. The margin to 10 points, 84-74. At that time, it was game over. That's scoreboard pressure is too much. If you're within a five-point game, that's two long shots for this team. That's not at all outside of their capability. So I thought that was really bad. And it was Newball who couldn't push the ball any faster, gave it to Noy early to make the decision, and couldn't have made a worse one. Really unfortunate for Cairns and Noy himself. But they're done. That's it. That's the end of the Taipans. They didn't have home court and they lost. I don't think there's any surprise there. The big question for Cairns going into NBL 21, they have two players under contract, Majuk Deng and Mirko Jeric. That's it. That's all. That's two guys in their starting lineup. So the big question is, can they secure? And I think it's in this order: Machado, Newell, and Cam Oliver. Am I right in saying the priority is that order? Scott Machado first, DJ Newell second, Cam Oliver third. Just a question for you out there. The other big questions are over Kouat Noy and Cam Oliver. What are Noy's plans going forward? And as I said before, Newell and Machado are the priorities for me for this team. I think he gets a big offer. Obviously, the price of both of them goes up. Probably all three of them goes up. You can only bring back two, you would think. DJ Newell seems to have a pretty good rapport with the team. I think he'll return. Scott Machado, you have to pay for, and he's the most important one. So I think if you retain those two, you lose Oliver. You can only have two of these three, would be my impression. I think a lot of teams like what they saw from those two. And I think for the money distribution, you can maybe get some of Cam Oliver's return in a different area. This was not a good rebounding team, and obviously I think that came hand in hand with the way Cam Oliver plays, and that's not a slight on him as a player, it's just the way it went. Can they redistribute his money to address those areas? Careless turnovers and rebounding percentage were a huge problem for this team, and Cam Oliver doesn't do a thing to address both of those, so maybe you can do something else, but I think it'd be nice to have all three back for sure. And that is the Cairns Taipans in Game 3. Let's look forward to Game 1 of the Grand Final, which is going to be played in 10 hours, just under 10 hours, from recording this. Bryce Cotton, that is, dominated Sydney in the season, and I don't see that halting in the Grand Final. 17% was Trimble's magic number, and that was not against Sydney, that was just against them in the finals, but Cotton averaged 22 points per game in the regular season and 33 against Sydney. A jump of 33% in scoring. Melo Trimble looked really good against Sydney and did half of that increase in scoring. Yeah. The matchups. Let's look at the matchups here. So I thought let's just at first glance diagnose a winner of the matchup. Plumlee and Bogut, I think they play each other to a standstill. Kay and Tate, I think again, they play each other to a standstill. Tariqo White and Newley, I'm all in on Tariqo White. Cotton and Lish, all in on Cotton. And Mitch Norton and Casper Ware, I'm all in on Casper Ware. The benches, let's just do them collectively. Steindl, Wagstaff and Martin versus Luzeda, Cooks and Kickett. I like that Perth bench better. I like Steindl over Luzeda. I like Wagstaff, probably not as much as Cooks, but even then, probably I do prefer Wagstaff. And then Damian Martin over Kickett. I really worry about Kickett in this series. So for that reason, I'm taking the Perth bench. And that Sydney bench is going to see a lot of minutes. Heck of a lot of minutes. So for me, looking at those matchups, Perth have the better team. You've got two wins in Tariqo White and Cotton. Two draws in the Bogut-Plumlee matchup and the K-Tate matchup. And then one loss in Casper Ware over Mitch Norton. One problem for Perth, and this is, actually, before I say that, I want to talk about, I just think Perth are really going to punish Kickett and the younger Luzeda. I really feel like that they're the two that they've got on their bulletin board of, when you see Daniel Kickett on the floor, either feed Miles Plumlee on a little bit of a face up and step through and rip, or put him in a pick and roll. And then Luzeda as well, I feel like if he is your defender, watch the back cut. Especially if he's on a Damian Martin. I see Martin slipping through for little layups and Norton all the time. But going on, the biggest problem I see for Perth in this series, because I do just like their team better. The only problem, it's 4,000 kilometres, or nearly 4,000 kilometres from Perth to Sydney. That's a flight time of 4 hours, 10 minutes in cramped seats. These guys don't have a private jet. There's no bend at wings or nothing like that. If Perth don't get game one, the likelihood that they win in Sydney diminishes with the travel-induced fatigue of the series and the travel schedule. I really don't think this series is a question of basketball. I think Perth have the better team on the floor, and I don't think Sydney can win in Perth. I don't think Sydney are able to take off from Kingsford Smith Airport and fly into Perth Airport, whatever it's called. I think it is called Perth Airport. fly in there, take a few days to decompress and then play. Or maybe if the schedule's even tighter, especially looking at the schedule of the finals, of the grand final, which I'm actually going to quickly bring up. I don't think there's a huge jump in the days between. So, I mean, the first one's on Sunday and then Friday. Okay, that's one that, well, my face is red. But I don't, even still, even with that break, I don't think Sydney win in Perth. I really don't. And I think Gleeson is going to look at that stat of, well, whoever wins game one wins this series. I think Sydney have shown themselves to be slow in their adjustments. And so for that reason, I think Perth win game one and therefore, and then just milk out home court the rest of the way. And by that reason, win in four. Win game one, game two, lose game three, win game four. There's your best of three. Best 2-3, I should say. So that's it, but that's important. The other thing as well with this series, other than those matchup of players we looked at, is the Weaver versus Gleeson. Will Weaver, Trevor Gleeson. And I've just got written here, the scars of losing to win. Trevor Gleeson has those scars. When he sees a defensive scheme that is stopping his team or an offensive scheme, he's presumably seen a lot of that before and has some kind of adjustment or measure that he can tangibly feel, like a scar, to make that change. I don't see that from Will Weaver, not yet in his coaching career. Anyway, he's a very young man. So there needs to be... That's why I like Gleeson in the matchup. I think also Gleeson's shown that he's got these nifty little tricks in his offense and defense to change things up. And I think if Perth or Sydney, and I feel like I'm really ragging on Sydney, I do feel like they've got a chance in this series, but I just really favor Perth. It's about disruption. And I don't feel like Sydney do a lot of disruptive stuff. Whereas Perth do annoy. They're a nuisance. They're an annoying team. They disrupt. And Gleeson is probably the best at it. And the officials will tell you that. The fans of other teams will tell you that. And maybe even the players themselves on the Wildcats would say that of Trevor Gleeson. To play devil's advocate, well, you could say that those losing scars or losing scars to win would also be on the bodies of Andrew Bogut, Kevin Lish, and Casper Ware. And maybe they are, but they're certainly on the bodies of Wagstaff, Martin, that whole Cotton, why all those guys, you know, they've all got them as well. So, but the one pulling the strings is quite important. The four factors of winning in the Real GM preview. If you haven't been on this website, it's a really good reference for NBL stats and figures. The four factors they have are effective field goal percentage, offensive rebounding percentage, free throw rate, and turnover percentage. Perth lead three of those four categories, all of them except effective field goal percentage. And that effective field goal percentage is based off the regular season and the first round of the finals, which I think maybe just regular season. I think if you took into account the finals, I think Perth may sweep all four of those categories. And I'm not surprised. Offensive rebounding is a Perth staple. It's a real deficiency of the Kings. Well, not offensive rebounding is, but that is too. But defensive rebounding. So we'll see what happens. Putting it all aside, this is my last thought on this, and you can go back to your day and enjoy the games later tonight. But putting aside all the soaring rhetoric, numbers, and narrative, I just think that Perth are the more talented team and they possess the most special ingredient for success. And that's number 11, Bryce Cotton, the finest player to ever take the floor in the NBL. That's it. That's all I've got. It's a very short turnaround. I haven't had a huge chance to look at these stats and figures and things, but excited to do that after this game one. And there is a big break between game one and two, so I will do. A reminder out there, rate, review, and subscribe to the program. You know, why not? Wherever you're listening to this, if you're doing the dishes or sitting on the toilet or whatever it is, and Perth fans with a heart rate of 150, whatever it was, do me a favor. Calm down. Listen to my voice. Calm down. It's going to be okay. Even if you lose game one, we'll see what happens. Thanks very much, everyone, and I'll see you next time.